Heute zu Gast die Horsemanship-Legende Pat Pirelli.
If every horse's mother could watch her foal get its first ride, get all of its training, would she be smiling and saying, oh, look at my son, look at the nice process he's going through, the teachers are so nice to my son and my daughter? Or would they be cringing? When I play with a horse, I go, if your mom was watching, I promise you I'm going to put a smile on her face.
Herzlich willkommen beim WeHorse Podcast mit Christian Kröber.
Vor wenigen Wochen auf der Equitana, der Weltmesse des Pferdesports in Essen, bin ich durch Zufall in Pat Pirelli gelaufen und wir haben uns viele Jahre nicht gesehen und haben dann an Ort und Stelle beschlossen, hey, lass mal einen Podcast machen. Das ist heute rausgekommen. Pat Pirelli ist einer der Pioniere des Horsemanship. Er selber hat seine eigene Ausbildungsmethode, das Pat Pirelli Natural Horsemanship, gegründet, das auf Kommunikation, Verständnis und Psychologie basiert, das von über 1 Million Menschen in 76 Ländern schon genutzt wurde. Man kann zu seiner Ausbildungsmethode stehen, wie man möchte. Ich weiß, es gibt auch viele Kritiker davon. Nichtsdestotrotz ist er wirklich, wie ich finde, eine inspirierende Person. Sein Blick auf die Dinge, sein Blick auf die Pferdewelt ist auf jeden Fall beachtenswert. Und wir machen jetzt einen kleinen Deep Dive. Das Ganze ist auf Englisch. Und ich glaube, das bringt auch am authentischsten rüber, was Pat Pirelli denkt und fühlt. Und ich hoffe, ihr könnt einiges daraus mitnehmen. Im Übrigen ist inzwischen die Nominierungsphase eröffnet für den WeHorse Courage Award 2025. Wir möchten Menschen auszeichnen, die mit Mut und Engagement hohe Standards im Umgang und in der Ausbildung mit Pferden fördern und das Ganze auch verbreiten. Brücken bauen, anstatt Gräben zu vertiefen. Das ist das große Thema unseres Awards in diesem Jahr. Ihr seid auch gefragt, sendet uns eure Vorschläge, die dann weitergereicht werden an die 5-köpfige Jury, unter anderem Ingrid Klimke und Lisa Röckener. Schaut vorbei unter www.wehorse.com/award. Dort ist ein einfaches Formular, das ihr ausfüllen müsst. Das Ganze ist auch anonym möglich und dann geht eure Nominierung raus zum WeHorse Courage Award 2025, der im Übrigen verliehen wird am 1. Juni in Hamburg.
Pat, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Christian.
Great to have you. Finally, finally here on our podcast. You are one of the leading examples and one of the most influential people in the horse world, especially when it comes to horsemanship. What is your original inspiration to become a trainer and to create natural horsemanship what it is today?
Thanks. Well, that's a good question. Well, I think, you know, kind of interestingly enough, when people come to my website, say, they always ask three questions. Who is Pat Pirelli really? Okay. Number one.
We have time to find out now.
Yeah, we will find out. It's fine. Number two, why is he trying to sell me a program rather than a video or a clinic? Because, you know, everybody thinks he's a clinician. He's, you know, this is what he's going to try to get me to do, or sell me a video on my problem or what I want, right? And number three, now that I'm convinced that this is who Pat Pirelli really is, and that's why I should want to study with him, and why I realize now the program is, how do I do the program? Okay. Those are the three questions that everybody basically has in their mind, you know, when they come there. And so I think the thing that I probably try to get people to realize is that number one is I'm a real horse lover. And I don't think a lot of trainers really love horse. Like, I take my vacations with horses. You know what I mean? On horseback, or my hobbies. If I go, you know, like if I go to cutting competition or rein cow horse competition or ranch riding competition, I do it because that's what I do for fun. Yeah. You know, I go roping or I do, you know what I mean? I don't go on a boat or
you're a real cowboy.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that's probably the next thing is I'm a real cowboy. First of all, I worked on a ranch in Nevada when I was 12 years old. It was 500,000 acres. It was 50 miles wide and 100 miles long.
And on horseback all day.
Yeah, all summer. Yeah. And I was rodeo cowboy. I was, when I was 16, 17, I went to a little rodeo school. And I got on this bucking horse and I rode it. And the pickup man said to me, "Wow, this, you know, how long you been doing this?" And I said, "That was my first time." He said, "Come here." And he introduced me to Johnny Hawkins, who was the world champion. And he was the first man inducted in the Hall of Fame. So he had a little rodeo school. So he coached me for about 200 horses. And he would put me on six that he knew I could ride and one that he was pretty sure I couldn't. Give me a little humble pie. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I won the first three rodeos I went to. I was the Rookie of the Year in 1972. And I had a 14-year bronc riding career. So I've been a rodeo cowboy. I've worked on big ranches. I've owned over 5,000 head of cattle myself. I just sold a 1,000-acre ranch in Colorado. And so I'm a horse lover, but I'm also a cowboy. But altogether, I think the other thing is that I'm a success coach. I love the smell of success. I love coaching.
For the horse and the rider.
Yes. For either one. If a horse, like when I go home, there's a horse that was at my horse psychology seminar summit last weekend. And this horse really has trouble with human environment, the saddle with, you know, different things and panics and stuff. And I know I'll smell success with that horse. It's going to probably take me 3 or 4 months my program and what we'll do with him and for him. But with people, I love it when I can take somebody that's good and get them to be great, and someone that's great to be greater, and somebody that's, you know, whatever their talents are. And, you know, some people just want to be safe and have fun, and other people want to be, you know, competitive, and other people want to be professional. So I love coaching people.
When did you first realize that you're going to be a very, very good trainer?
Back in 1975, I started the American Mule Association. I was the founding president.
The Mule Association, okay.
Mule Association. Yeah. And I had this thing. I thought, if I could learn to train mules.
Then it's easy to train to horses.
Exactly. You got it. And that's exactly what happened. I trained over 300 mules. I've had 12 world champions. I had a mule named Thumper. I showed her competed on her at the World Snaffle Bit Futurity, the World Championships. She had the third highest reining mark out of 375 horses. I got hate mail. The trainers hated it because their owners got mad at them because a mule outscored them. Okay, so I got really good with me. And then that's where really you must treat a mule like you should treat a horse, with love, language, leadership, equal doses, communication, understanding the psychology, not mechanics, fear, and intimidation. And so many horses get trained, you know, mechanically, and they're very obedient, but they've lost their soul. Mm. So really the mule thing is what started it. And then all of a sudden I started finding horses to be easy. And then I earned a scholarship to train under one of the greatest Western horsemen in the world, Troy Henry. Mm-hmm. And Troy Henry, we were the first people to ship quarter horses to Germany.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we were shipping.
In the late 70s, I suppose, around that.
No. Early 70s. Yeah. Early 70s. And he, through a guy named Bill Verdugo, we were shipping horses here, Brazil, and Australia, quarter horses. Yeah. And about 50 horses a year all total. Yeah. And some of the greatest Western trainers all worked for Mr. Henry at one time or another. So I had 5 years with him and he passed away. And I realized, first of all, my rodeo career, I had a 98% ride record over 14 years. And that's like 3,000 rodeos. So that was pretty, you know, so like it came easy to me. And then I kept studying all the acts, you know, the clowns would have, you know, an act with a dog or with a donkey or with a mule or with a horse or with a chimpanzee or what. And I kept, you know,
practicing.
Yeah, well, I kept learning. Like, teach me how did you do that? You know, so I started learning about animal training. And so when I had a rodeo school in the early 70s, I ended up with three world champions. And I found out that I loved teaching people. But here's the funnest story. How I found out that I was really good at teaching. So I was going to imagine now I'm 19 or 20 years old and in a community in the East Bay Area, which was very rural at that time. All of a sudden, one of their young men became a famous rodeo star. So, you know, everybody's, you know.
Everyone hyped.
Yeah, hype is there, right? Well, when I first started in junior rodeos, I got bucked off 20 times in a row before I rode the first one.
Really?
You know, yeah, they have cows and steers and stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
Because nobody gave me any prep and any teaching, right? So my cousin, Donnie, he comes to his Uncle Pat. He said, is it possible for you to help me? I'm going to go on the Livermore Junior Rodeo, which is a very big one, by the way. Like 300 kids going to get on these bucking animals, right? Mm-hmm. I said, yeah. So I took a little Shetland pony and I got the rope for him to put his hand in. I showed him all the different things to do. And then I would lunge the pony around in a circle and turn it back and jerk, you know, and taught him to, you know, stay on. And then I started putting hay bales. So like four hay bales so that the pony had to jump over the bales so he could feel what the jump was going to feel like. Mm-hmm. And then I put hay bales over here in a circle. So he had to jump over these hay bales, then those hay, and then finally four. So it was very much like riding a bucket. And I'd jerk it and turn it the other way and go, guess what? My cousin Donnie not only stayed on his first bucking animal, he won first out of 300. Because I made it so I could see the process.
A step-by-step approach to it.
Yes. I could see what I didn't get. And because I always, when I can get something, then I go, how can I make that simpler? How could I get somebody else to do that quicker? So that's when I learned. Mr. Henry helped me become really good with really knowing horse psychology, but also applied to sports. How to get horses to slide farther, how to get horses to spin faster, how to get horses to do lead changes better, how to get, you know, that was what we were into then. I was a performance horse trainer. And then after he passed away, I found out by giving the seminar that what I really loved doing was helping regular people get extraordinary results. And so instead of trying to be the superstar in the Western sports, I decided to go to the people and just the leisure rider or anybody that wanted help with their horse. And I found out
the quote unquote normal rider.
Yeah. And what I found out was, is that everybody's been told, just catch them any way you can, kick them to go, pull them to stop and use the reins to turn. And I've been now 43 years teaching people that connection is king. You got to get your horse to want to be with you, come to you and follow you, just like your dog. Number two, there's preparations we can do on the ground to make sure it's safe and even achieve excellence, the games on the ground. And then don't kick them to go. Just bring your energy up. Don't pull them to stop. Just relax and lift a little. And don't lean to turn. Push your horse around. So 43 years, I've been teaching people five things not to do.
Yeah. But eventually, and you just mentioned that, it is teaching people and then teaching horses, right?
I teach people how to teach train their horse. That's what I really do.
Yeah. And eventually you try to break down these different problems into separate smaller pieces and then tackle it like you did with the haystacks?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so first of all, if you wanted to learn a musical instrument, okay, like I play guitar. And one of the things I do is I've actually kind of done the same thing with guitar playing. I'm not a great guitar player, but I can play pretty good, you know. And two nights ago at the party, I played for 2 hours. And okay, but so like, for example, I go, I'm going to show you something in the next hour that if somebody would have showed me this when I started playing guitar, I would be way better by now. You know, like this little ding, 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 that's string number one. Dude, and it gets getting lower. One, two, they're named 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So when someone says to you, put this finger on the second fret on string number 3, you know where to go. And then each one of the strings has a letter. you know, the first one is E, the second one is B, third one is G, the next one is D, A, and E again, okay? And then I show them how each note goes down the thing, and so I just show them a couple of things. And I had a guy one time, I taught him to play guitar. 6 months later, he had his own professional band. Things like that, it's just because a lot of people are really good at something, but that doesn't make them a good teacher. Matter of fact, oftentimes people that are super talented can't understand why you and I just can't do it. Okay. And so there's only two kinds of people in the world, simplifiers and complicators. And complicators think that simplifiers are complicated.
Exactly.
Okay.
That's actually, that's a good one. Yeah.
So somewhere in there, just my whole North Star has been horses and helping people and the horse industry you know, and then finally I found my niche, and then I realized that every word that came out of my mouth was either savvy or natural. And savvy means that you have like a second nature, you know, that it just is it's in an instinctual level. And so what I try to get people to do is, you know, like people ask me questions, I got all the answers tattooed on the inside of my eyelids because it's
coming very natural.
Brr, brr, brr. Oh yeah. You know, and anybody who's good at something, mechanic or whatever, they just, oh yeah, you know what to do. Or like I see you guys with these computers, oh yeah, you know, you just
it's daily work.
Yeah, I can't even, I got a computer one time and I looked for the on button and it said no. And they said it's upside down. They said it still says no.
But you could actually still break down the problem into those smaller pieces and then
I'm sure. Well, I'm starting to learn to get around this silly iPhone.
You look very proficient with the iPhone though.
Fairly. Yeah. I mean, to some extent, but it's because, so I'm a simplifier and I love simplifying things for people. And I love the look on people's faces when they go, I would have never thought of that.
Werbung.
Horses and Dreams meets the Netherlands. Das diesjährige Motto des berühmten Spring- und Dressurturniers auf dem Hof Kasselmann am Teutoburger Wald. Vom 23. bis 27. April trifft sich dort die Weltelite des Dressur- und Springsports. Und ihr könnt live dabei sein. Erlebt internationale Topreiter, Sport auf höchstem Niveau und ein wirklich einzigartiges Flair. Wie jedes Jahr erwartet euch natürlich nicht nur erstklassiger Reitsport, sondern auch ein abwechslungsreiches Rahmenprogramm für die ganze Familie. Zum Beispiel eine exklusive Abendshow mit Lisa und Mattes Röckener und weiteren beliebten Social-Media-Stars. 2025 steht alles im Zeichen der Niederlande. Es gibt landestypische Leckereien, passende Musik und jede Menge Oranje-Feeling. Also, wenn ihr das nicht verpassen wollt, sichert euch jetzt eure Tickets. Das geht online unter horses-and-dreams.de oder an der Tageskasse. Wir wünschen euch viel Spaß und ein unvergessliches Erlebnis.
Werbung Ende. And how did you then end up creating a global movement around that? I mean, it's one thing being an excellent trainer.
Sure.
It's another thing bringing this across an ocean here, where at the moment sitting in Germany, into Germany, and now having so many instructors and so many people actually practicing natural horsemanship, which became a brand.
Yes. It became a movement more than anything. Pirelli Natural Horsemanship is a brand. Natural horsemanship is more of a movement. But here's how it simply happened. I had a student from Switzerland that was met at a coffee shop or something, said, do you give riding lessons? And I said, no, I don't give riding lessons. And anyway, one thing led her, and her name was Sylvia Fuhrer. And she said, well, can I come watch you train horses? I said, yeah, I guess so. Anyway, one thing led to another. Started giving her lessons. And then the next year she came back and took some more lessons. And then we became friends. And then she invited me to come to Europe. Okay. So I went to Switzerland. And that was it. And it was kind of fun, that sort of thing. But I met a man in Northern California named Jean-Claude Deasley.
One of the legends here from Europe.
Yes. And we became friends instantly. And for about, I guess, almost 20 years, we would meet and he was interested in reining cow horses. And we would meet in Reno at the Snaffle Bit Futurity, one thing later. And we just had the same philosophy. And we both, you know, connected, and really you could tell in the heart we were both on the same page. And anyway, and then he introduced me to your father, Rolf Gruber, and said he must come here to Equitana. Wow. So that's how I got my invite. And when I came here, I met a young man named Birga Gizika, and Birga was trying to be like a Western performance trainer, and he had a horse named Paul. It was a nice registered quarter horse.
And Birga's also a renowned trainer here from Germany.
Yeah, now yeah. he is. Yeah. yeah. And so anyway, so I went and did a clinic there, and then I used his horse and taught it to do the Liberty and taught it to, you know, do slide stops without the bridle and, you know, all these kind of things while I was here for a couple of weeks. And so I came and started doing demonstrations here in at Equitana. And, you know, two things happened. One, I brought a video that showed all kinds of demonstrations, myself and my students doing all these amazing things. And we had it in hall used to be the Western Hall over there. I think that was Hall 4 then. And yeah. And they had to bring policemen in because the crowds clogged up the thing. They wanted to see that video. You know, it was a, you know, 2 or 3 minute long video, and people never saw that. Well, then I started doing demos like 7 a day. I was in this ring and then that ring and then this ring and then that ring. And then finally, your dad said, put him in Hall 6.
In the big arena here.
In the big arena. Mm-hmm. So many people went that the police came and had to extract.
Close down the place.
They were afraid it was going to collapse. Yeah. It was over the limit. It was 6,000 people then. It was over the limit, and people were standing on top of each other. It caught people's attention. It caught on fire so quickly.
Why do you think it caught on fire so quickly here in Germany? What was the niche that just hasn't been explored yet?
I think it was so new and exciting and, you know, real. People could see this is real, and they would bring another problem horse or, you know, whatever the things we were doing, they could see it was real, and they could see that regular people like themselves, they started using students in the demonstrations or started, you know, teaching in it. Somebody had never done anything with the horse, with my program. And I think that it was just the right time at the right place. And I think maybe everything is so kind of military approach.
Here in Europe.
Yeah.
Yeah, because historically it's rooted in the military. And right. then out of that, we yeah. developed dressage, which became an Olympic discipline.
And so everything is very linear. Yeah. And so this seemed to just touch people's hearts, yeah. the same.
And to break open this logical connection that we have that riding is an English saddle and a normal bridle or double bridle that we yeah. always used to take.
Right. And so, you know, the funniest thing that probably nobody remembers now, but people used to think that it was only Western and only worked with quarter horses, mm-hmm. my program. That was the first big, you know, misconception. And now, you know what the big misconception is? They think that natural horsemanship is trick training. And a lot of people that do trick training do natural horsemanship. And so the FEI called me up. They're in Switzerland, right?
Yeah, the FEI, for everyone that does know, that's the World Riding Association
right.
in charge of all the Olympic disciplines and
right.
all the other
so
small disciplines.
So they called me an interview, asked for an interview. Yeah. They emailed first, can we do an interview? Yeah. They started asking me all these questions. What does the pedestal have to do with sport training? What does laying a horse down have to do? And all of a sudden I went, you're not asking me what natural horsemanship is why it's good for sport horses. You're asking me why trick training. They said, yeah.
They thought you were a trick trainer, basically.
Yeah. Well, they thought natural horsemanship was a trick trainer. Yeah. And because the reason is because you go on Instagram or whatever, that's all you see. Mm. You know, YouTube, you just see all these people that are wiggle a rope and do a couple of things that I do. And then they lay the horse down or kneel him, which is all fine. But that's not what I do. I use the stuff on the ground to prepare the horse for performance or purpose. So here's my little definition. You ready? Because I don't know what, if you go to the dictionary and look up horsemanship, what does it say? Have you ever looked that word up? It's a very misused word.
I give you my interpretation. I don't know the dictionary definition, but I would say it is having a connection to your horse and being able to do stuff together on ice level.
Good. Very good. In the dictionaries, it always says something, the art of riding or, you know, blah, 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 something like
very
that.
Very fluffy.
Yeah. And very nondescript. So here's mine. The perpetual real horsemanship. Natural. First of all, the word natural and real are the only synonyms you can get together.
Mm. We're going to talk about the natural part soon also. But
yeah. So my definition of real horsemanship is the perpetual and progressive series of habits and skills that both horses and humans need to become partners in preparation for purpose and performance.
And that's also rooted in the idea of breaking down
the steps.
Things into smaller pieces.
Right. So you have to have a cake, then you have the icing, then you have the candles. So now I have three programs. I have the partnership program, which is for people that want to get a good basic and leisure, you know, people who really want to have the great companion animal, friend, partner, and for people to learn real horsemanship. Then once they've learned that, I have the Pirelli Performance Program. And that's what I showed the other day. All of those guys are graduates of my performance program. You know, we had Giorgio, who's jumping a meter 50 with the bareback and bridleless. And we had, you know, Franco with his stallion, slide, stop, spins, lead changes, all the dressage rider and the equitation rider. I have a performance program. And then I have a professionals program. I teach people how to become professionals in the horse industry, and not just training horses, but how to function with people, how to read people, and how to do facility design, maintenance, and management, and also how to do the five pillars of business. You see, I'm one of the first graduates of the Michael Gerber business development program, and teaches us five pillars. First, you have to know what your products and services are. Then you have to know who your human capital is going to be, who's going to do all that work. Mm-hmm. Then you got to do your finance. Then you got to do your sales and marketing and sales. And then you've got to do IT integration.
And again, so, breaking down.
That's what I teach everybody.
The problem.
So all of my professionals actually learn how to be businessmen. Mm-hmm. And most horse trainers are not good businessmen.
Of course not. And that's for many horse trainers a big problem, because they don't really know what they do and they're rooted in their passion.
Yes.
But they don't really have the business sense to actually know what they are doing.
So the horse industry is quite arcane still compared mm-hmm. to other industries.
Yeah.
So here's why. Four reasons. It's steeped in wives' tales, mythology, bovine fecal matter, and ego. And none of that is scientific. So what I have to do is I've come up with a behavioral science, how to analyze your horse's horsenality so that you know to go slower with right brain introverts and go faster with left brain extroverts, and teach your horse why he should do it if he's a left brain introvert. It's a very behavioral science, which, by the way, Dr. Miller and I, who one of my great friends just passed away, he's the one who introduced the world to foal imprinting. And we were at a equine ethology symposium in Paris 20 years ago, maybe longer, you know. And again, because these were people who were examining whether the Pirelli program, these seven games, were really scientifically sound behavioral modifiers. And they gave us a standing ovation. They went, this is the real deal, because it follows the same thing that happens in equine ethology, which is the study of the natural behavior of wild horses. How do they socialize? Why is there one stallion and 20 mares? And how do these young stallions fight, you know, and earn their pecking order to get to be the one that goes to challenge the new one? And, you know, how does all that work? And these people study this all over the world, from Porosky's horses to Nevada, to Australia Brumbies, okay, feral horses. And by the way, since we're on that, you know the word Mustang? You know what the real word is? It's a Spanish word, Mustaño.
Okay, I didn't know that.
And it's an anglicized word,
yeah.
Mustaño to Mustang.
Yeah. And Mustang in Spanish is what?
It's a feral horse.
Okay.
Just means a horse that used to be, you know, with humans and then got away and started breeding and, and you know, there's only one really wild horse in the world, and that's Pirolsky's horse.
Yes.
The other horses are all feral horses.
Yeah.
They're wild. They're living in the wild. They're not. They don't have fences.
Domesticized, and at some stage they
We have genetically altered. Yeah. We've GMO'd all our horses.
Yeah.
We have genetically altered. You know, I mean, think about the warm bloods, or how did they, you know, take those trotting horses, the carriage horses, and then start You know, breed them with a little bit of draft, a little bit of thoroughbred, you know, whatever.
Exactly.
You know, and of course, Germans and Dutch, and Netherlands people are, especially in this area, are fascinated by genetics.
Yeah.
And some of the very best breeding has come there. But no matter where no matter where the horses are, whether it's racing horses, jumping horses, dressage horses, or cutting horses, it's all, we've genetically altered them. So now you turn them loose and they start to kind of head back to, you know, what nature would, how are they going to survive in a natural environment? You know, they got to have good hooves and, you know, dental occlusions have got to be correct. You know, nature will balance itself if you give it 100 years or so. So we screwed up overnight and nature will get it back.
Werbung. Wer kennt es nicht? Es ist Samstag, das Pferd hat eine kleine Verletzung und ich bin mir unsicher, muss ein Tierarzt draufschauen? Muss ich vielleicht in die nächste Klinik fahren, um eine weitere Behandlung machen zu lassen? All das sind wichtige Fragen, wo wir inzwischen eine Hilfe anbieten. Denn für alle WEOS-Mitglieder gibt es den Online-Tierarzt. Insbesondere spannend für den gerade beschriebenen Fall, aber auch für nicht akute Verletzungen und Krankheiten, wo nicht sofort ein Tierarzt vor Ort sich ein Bild machen sollte. Die Frage, gehe ich in die Klinik, ja oder nein? Oder auch eine wichtige zweite Meinung. All das sind Fragestellungen, die wir abdecken mit dem Online-Tierarzt. Zudem ist es eine echte Kostenreduktion, denn das Ganze ist kostenlos innerhalb der WEOS-Mitgliedschaft unbegrenzt zu nutzen. Zudem täglich, wirklich täglich, ganze Woche von Montag bis Sonntag, 7 bis 24 Uhr gibt es Termine. Was müsst ihr tun? Ihr müsst WEOS Mitglied sein. Ihr müsst auf unserer Seite in den Bereich Online-Tierarzt navigieren und dann könnt ihr dort den Termin vereinbaren, exklusiv für WEOS Mitglieder. Werbung Ende.
So, we talked about the horsemanship angle and the definition to you what horsemanship is. So let's move over to the
natural
natural part, because together it's natural horsemanship.
Okay.
So what's the natural part of it?
Natural. It's only natural for horses.
Yeah.
This is a foreign subject to human beings, because so horses are prey animals. People are predators. Horses are herd animals. We're pack animals. We like to gang up on people. See all the people on the internet that gang up on people like me when they see one little excerpt or something, and man, the keyboard courage, and people are saying, yeah, that Pat Pirelli guy's a bad guy, whatever. They gang up on people. That's why in the Old West, they used to lynch people. The town would get mad, and whether he was guilty or not, and they thought he was guilty.
Didn't matter.
They hang him or put tar and feather on him, right? Okay. So we are primates. We are monkey see, monkey do learners. And it's natural for human beings to lean and pull and grip and grapple everything that a horse hates. It is natural for horses, because what horses do with each other, and that's why I started the show the other day with turning the horses loose. And what do horses do with each other? That's the natural part. And so, you know, people can argue and say, oh, nothing's natural about training a horse or being with a horse or something. But if you think about it, why did the horse get the name Equus? Equal us. Somebody back thousands of years ago said, oh, this is Equus. This animal has it. And there's something, the horse is the only animal that I can think of that a human being can ride and have a chance at looking sexy.
That's true. That's true.
You can't look sexy on a donkey.
On a cow.
On a cow, a camel, an elephant.
It elevates us.
there's something magical about it. So you go around Europe, you see all these statues of some great man, kings. Kings and generals.
Always on a horse.
Always on a horse. So there is something about the horse that is really, there's a natural phenomenon. So I always say horsemanship is a natural phenomenon. I mean, why would the ultimate prey animal let the ultimate predator even touch him, let alone teach him all, you know, work with all these things, play with them on the ground, let alone ride them, let alone jump jumps, do dressage, do cutting and reining. Why would that animal? It's because there's a natural attraction.
A natural connection, yeah.
And there's something almost male and female about rider and horse. There is. Our body parts fit. And so that to me is I think everybody's genuine fascination with the horse. And so many people get so linear and go, oh, I don't like that breed of horse, and I don't like, you know, I only like this or whatever. But what people really, only two kind of people in the world, horse lovers and the other kind.
But on average, I would say the percentage is so high. Like you rarely meet people that say, I really hate horses. I cannot stand them. The average
the husband say that. Yeah. They cost too much.
For other reasons because it's so expensive. But the general perception towards horses is just so good.
Oh yeah. But if you put horses in a urban environment, it doesn't take long for people to say, oh, they stink, they got flies, we don't like them. You know, we don't want to hear clippity clop going down the street. You'd be surprised how many communities that have started off as there's one community in California where one side is a sidewalk, the other side of the street is a horse trail. And now it's called Horsetown USA. They're now trying to outlaw the horses.
Because they're urbanizing the area.
Yeah, because they're like, we don't want the flies, we don't want the smell, we don't want to see the poop, we don't, you know. So in a way, yeah, they love, you know, like people love dolphins, right? Yeah. Oh, dolphins are great because they always look like they got a smile on their face. I guarantee you, if you had to mess around with dolphins every day and like I know dolphin trainers and what they have to do to the stinky fishy food they have to feed them and do all the stuff, and that, you know, we think cleaning a stall's bad. You go work in a dolphin place. Yeah. You got to play with them six times a day.
True.
You know, Freddie Kinney, I used to study with him for 2 weeks a year. And, you know, we would go over to the dolphin pool there at Rappersville. And you know, and he taught me a lot about playing with a giraffe, playing with the camel, playing with, you know, ostrich. We did all kinds of different things, you know. So the horse is special. And there is if you study what they do with each other, that's what natural horsemanship is. And that's why these seven games that horses play with each other is what I teach people to do. Is how do you connect? Number one. How do you apply steady pressure? Number two. How do you apply rhythmic pressure? Number three. And then how do you get upward and downward transitions on a straight line? How do you get perfect circles? How do you get lateral moves? And how do you get a horse to collect? Those are the seven things. You do it on the ground and in the saddle. And so a lot of the misconception that people have is that the Pirelli program is just stuff we do on the ground, and natural horsemanship is just stuff you do on the ground. Riding is another thing. There is a natural way to ride a horse without contact, and a natural way to ride a horse with contact. And the hardest one for humans, even for me to teach other people, is to ride with contact and not micromanage. See, the human there's four propensities that humans have that cause them not to be able to be great with horses, not to achieve equus. Number one, we are the most chauvinistic animal in the world. We think we're better than every other animal. Number two, we are naturally chauvinistic. We are naturally autocratic. We want to micromanage everything. And since we're smarter than our brothers and our sisters and our cousins, we want to micromanage them, or our husbands or our wives. Number three, we're anthropomorphic, which means putting human thoughts and values into animals' actions. And it's bad enough with a dog, but when you do it with a horse, it's a prey animal. You can't judge what he did, why he did what he did, with our values. And the last thing is that an addiction to linear thinking. People want their process to look like their product. And that's the whole secret about horses, is that the process doesn't need at all look like the product. And so one of the things that confuses people is, what's the relevance of all this stuff that these Pirelli people do on the ground? How is that going to help my dressage horse? How's that going to help my jumping horse? How's that going to help my performance horse? And that's why we...
Because it may take 2 years and you will see no result, and then it makes click, and then you have an exponential curve maybe.
Super exponential curve. And so that's where the other night, my whole demonstration was, I'm going to show you the Pirelli performance program, not the Pirelli play with horses for fun, okay? Mm-hmm. That's phase one. Phase two is now, if you want to, okay, in anything you do, you snow ski?
No, I used to not actively in Longbridge, okay. But I know how to do it.
Okay, yeah. So here's what everybody does. First, you just want to be safe, right?
Yeah.
Then you want to start having a little bit of fun. Can you have fun on skis?
Of course.
Yeah, me too. I can ski.
That's awesome.
Then you start to think, I want to be able to do stem Christies, or I want to be able to...
Yeah, exactly.
Then you want to... At least taste the excellence here and there. And then you want to get excellent. Then you want to be competitive. Then you want to be very competitive.
Yeah, that's true.
And then you become a professional. Yeah. If you ask any professional Austrian or Swiss snow ski instructor, or any ski instructor in the world, they all started off just being safe, having fun, touching excellence, getting excellence, competitive, very competitive. Then they became professionals. So that's... To me, what I've done, that's why I have three different programs now. The one is for the safe and fun and just taste excellence. The next one is for let's get competitive and very competitive. And you can see some of my guys, those guys they're winning. Okay. And I've got another 20 here in Europe that are winning all over the place in all the different disciplines. Then I teach people how to be equine professionals. And I don't know of another school that really teaches people how not only to train the horses ethically, how humanely and ethically, and how to teach people and to empower them and to do business. I don't know of any other school that does what my new campus does. I had a campus in Australia. I had one in Colorado, one in Florida, and one in England. Now I'm down to one campus in the United States. And so, but that campus is the Harvard of Horsemanship, where our purpose is to produce professional and competitive superstars for the future. And you saw some of them the other day.
Natural horsemanship as a philosophy and training method has been around for quite a number of years now. Here in Europe, we have a number of different riding styles, take the Olympic disciplines, working equitation evolved. We hear... also have Western riding, certainly different than you guys do it in the States. How do you view the influence of natural horsemanship on all these disciplines here in Europe?
Well, that's the reason I did my show the way I did the other night. But first of all, the fact that people... their hearts told them this was something that was good for them and for their horse. Okay. The leisure rider, 80% of all horse owners, maybe higher, do nothing competitive. And the 20% of the competition riders, English or Western or speed events or whatever it is, they can't believe anybody would own a horse and not compete. You know, it's like they're two different worlds.
Yeah. It's two worlds. Yeah.
So I think one of the things that is, first of all, people like Michel Robert,
the French show jumper,
just as natural. Yeah. He does things so different than everybody else. He's a natural horseman. Mm-hmm. He doesn't do the Pirelli program, but he is just so natural.
He follows the principles.
Yes,
just naturally.
Naturally, it's in his. So it's anybody that's a natural singer, a natural musician, a natural skier, a natural. You know, some people have just got that X factor, right? Okay. Well, my job is for regular people to get extraordinary results, and you saw people in there the other night, and horses will run faster and jump higher out of Heart and Desire, but you've got to be able to have the riding skills and all the different things and the knowledge on how to build, you know, like you saw. I mean, how many flying lead changes do you think the crowd saw the other night in my show?
Hundreds.
Yeah. There were, this horse was changing. That horse, yeah. You know, that's a performance.
Natural.
Yeah. And so these are people that are competing and winning. And so it's either you're very, very natural with as a rider or with a trainer or with horses, or you need to learn. So I don't think it's affected the show world quite yet because, again, I think most horse training methods are very chauvinistic, you know, and a lot of it comes from the military, which we've got rules and you must do this by this time and you must go like this. And I love structure, like the German training scale, rhythm, relaxation.
Super structured.
But rhythm, relaxation, contact, schwung, straightness, then collection.
Yeah.
I know that scale inside and out. And that's what I use. The words I use are rhythm, relaxation in the beginning stages. Rhythm, relaxation, understanding, then impulsion, straightness, and collection. Mm-hmm. So the first three, rhythm, relaxation,
super
and
similar.
Understanding. It's absolute. Yeah. No, it's Walter Zettel, who's one of my mentors. I rode with him 6 times a year for 6 days every time. And he would come and do 9 lessons. I would ride 4 and watch 5. Sit right next to him, watch 5. I learned from great masters. And I think a lot of people kind of in the horse business kind of learn it by themselves, so to speak. Or, you know, I know here in Germany that people take lessons and there's the whole Bereiter system and there's some things like that. But it's still, a lot of people are still just kind of just winging it.
A big topic to many people is the way the horse world is portrayed in online media, especially in social media, how riders are treating each other on social media. You just briefly touched upon that earlier. How do you see that we are boiling complex situation down to one shot or one small video sequence, and that we struggle to see the entire picture? How do you personally handle that?
Okay, well, first of all, humans are natural till we're 12. Then we turn into practicing adults. And an adult is a human being who practices making simple things difficult and easily addicted to linear thinking. They want the process to look like a product, and they want to write predatory rules. Okay? So because we're predators, we turn into pack animals like wolves. And so what happens is, and this is, I think, the secret with really great horsemen like Jean-Claude Disley, was they can see a dressage horse and a reining horse and see the similarities, not the differences. Okay? Even, what's the great Dutch rider? She's riding reining horses now.
Anki van Grunsven.
Anki. Yeah, she saw the similarities, okay? So now most people are always looking for differences. So this is why when people, what I think horses can do for people is teach people to be better human beings and to be more loving, more understanding, be the ambassador of yes instead of the minister of no. Look for similarities, look for good things, forgive a few mistakes, but no, what do they, you know, it's centuries old. Someone would take something out of context in a newspaper and they would just put that part. They didn't put the 16 paragraphs before, and they just take this one little statement out, right? Well, nowadays it's some little video on, you know, anybody can have 3 seconds or 30 seconds of not a nice, out of harmony, something happens, you know, unexpected or whatever. Oh, and the people love to take all that and glue things together. I've seen them take and edit videos and put.
Yeah, and social media is amplifying that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. So what I think horses can do for us is teach us all to be better human beings. So what I'd like to see is more people showing, you know, just let's show that not just show the good stuff. Now I am, you know, in 2009, I won the Humane Society of the United States. I won the Humane Horseman of the Year Award. I mean, they studied hard and long to see, it was I really humane with horses? And they did studies and did all kinds of things, and I won this award. And so that's what, to me, what people need to see. Okay, let me give it this way. If every horse's mother could watch her foal get its first ride, get all of its training, would she be smiling and saying, oh, look at my son. Look at the nice process he's going through. The teachers are so nice to my son or my daughter. Or would they be cringing? There's a lot of horse training out there that's primitive and shameful. And so I use this as a, when I play with a horse, I go, if your mom is watching, I promise you I'm going to put a smile on her face. And then the other thing is, I always say, whatever I'm doing, would my mom be smiling? My mom is in heaven now. And she's, I know whatever I'm doing. And my teachers, they're looking down. And I'm going, I'm doing everything I can. I want them going, yeah, you're doing it, Pat. You're doing it. Keep doing it. You're putting a smile on our face. So I think that's maybe a filter that we could look at is our mom and the horse's mom.
Yeah, exactly.
And if you that's just said, we got two moms watching what's going on here.
Better behave.
Yeah, it better be nice. Better be beautiful.
Yeah, exactly. Better be nice, yeah.
Yeah, it better be harmonious. It better be synchronistic. It needs to be artful. It needs to be beautiful. So that's what I call Pirelli natural horsemanship. Now, there's lots of natural horsemanship out there that is not Pirelli natural horsemanship. Most of it is an imitation of excerpts of, you know, wiggle the rope or do this or do that or get the horse run next to you or something like that. And some people are very natural anyway and have taken a few good ideas. And I saw some beautiful things last night in the Hop Top show. I was going, yeah, there you go. Yeah. People weren't doing that back in 1987 when I came here. But they're doing it now. So it's like I can see the...
It's a process.
I can see that it's growing, you know, and people are adapting it. The talented people get everything easy anyway. I don't care what. If they're talented, again... I've had over 200,000 graduates. They were regular people getting extraordinary results, not some super talent. Okay. Now the talented people, I'll take them. That's what I'm now, because my job is inspiration before information. Because if people don't say wow, they ain't gonna ask how. So what I'm looking for now are the talented few to give more inspiration. I want, you know, Kinsey. And
Kenzie Disley,
yeah. She's and her brother are and Laurent are all coming to South Carolina to my place. They're all like, you know, we were talking about it the last 2-3 days and Kenzie's ridden with me before. She came to Florida and rode with me and we did some things and stuff. So this is something, you know, which that's my gift to her father for what he did for me. Introduced me to your father and which opened these doors. And then again, my job was inspiration. And then pretty soon people wanted the information. And so it's a process of for me to keep simplifying how to do that. I think I've done a pretty good job on levels 1-4 for the leisure riders and the people that get a good basic. Now I'm really working hard on the performance. And my professionals program is quite good. So, but
cool.
You know, I got probably 50 more years left in me. I just turned 71.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Turned 71 and still on fire and our new place in South Carolina is one of the most gorgeous pieces of property I've ever seen. It's got four lakes, it's got a river, it's got beautiful sandy ground. It was a 3-day eventing facility, so it's got tracks and trails and jumps and water hazards and it's like
everything you need.
Everything for every horse needs to do those things. A reining horse needs to go in the forest. A reining horse needs to go the dressage horses. I get dressage horses that are afraid to go out of an arena. And we they're there for three or four months. And we, you know, and I'm talking about some, you know, $1 million horses that need this natural experience to for their foundation. And then they can handle way more things. And so it's like, why do so many dressage horses, are they so spooky?
Because they are just not practicing these situations.
Right. They don't, the hothouse flowers, nothing. We only ride here. We only do this. Every horse needs a great foundation. You know, that last night, you know, it put a smile on my face was all those children with the wings.
Yeah.
You know, riding bareback and natural and just riding around like wild Indians, but yet with some precision and some form and some, You know, I was like, I told my wife, I said, this is, you can't believe how
it was touching. It was literally touching.
It was literally touching. And so that's what I like to see. And then get those children, after they've had fun and learned how to be safe, and now they're getting excellent, now let them go into the disciplines. Not start taking up and down lessons, you know, how to post and how to sit and equitation lessons in the first five lessons riding a horse. That's crazy. You know, so it's like we got to exaggerate to learn. We find as we go along. We've got to have our young riders and our new riders have got to feel safe and have fun.
Pat, it was a pleasure having you on the pod, and thanks for taking the time.
Yeah, no, my pleasure. And I'm really proud of how you're carrying on. You know, I can see your father, the more we talk and stuff, I can, because he had an enthusiasm that was, you know, really, it caught this all on fire here, and he had a vision, and I can see you've got some of the same, the acorn didn't fall too far from the tree, so.
Yeah, thanks so much.
I'm really proud of you, and again, thanks to Jean-Claude Deasley for the friendship that we had and bringing there, and then now learn, also getting to know his two children. It's like I know him even better now. Mm. It's like I can
also carrying forward into the future this friendship from back in the days.
Yeah, yeah. It's really cool. So, yeah. You know, I tell people, if I don't see you in the future, I'll see you in the pasture.
Good.
May the horse be with you.
Exactly.
Okay.
Thanks so much, Pat.
Okay, very good. Cheers.
Ciao.
Diese Folge wurde produziert von Gloria Alter. Wenn ihr mögt, abonniert unseren Podcast-Channel überall dort, wo es gute Podcasts gibt. Und nicht vergessen, Nominierungsphase für den WeHorse Courage Award nur noch wenige Tage. Ciao, ciao.